Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Ladies and gentlemen,
let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese!
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to get in the game.
And hello again. This is Coach Chuck Griese with another week of American Tennis. And I need to say good evening today because for the first time we're broadcasting in the evening in a beautiful city of Charleston, South Carolina. I am on the road, and this will be a Tuesday evening broadcast. We will be back at a regular time at noon next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, noon, every noon Wednesday at, just tune in to your UR Tennis Network, area code 714-583-6853 is the number if you want to be on the show, but you can go to the UR Tennis Network on your iPhones, just push on the your iPod cast, and you can get all of the shows. Every day of the week, we have a new show. Each week, we talk about different issues in tennis, and usually, as of late, we've been talking about the power leaks in American tennis. We've got a different kind of show for you tonight because we want to highlight one of the greatest college players in the history of U.S. colleges. College tennis, and that's Mr. Mitchell Frank. And Mitchell, I think we have you on the line. Are you on the line?
Yeah. Hey, Coach.
Great, man. Can you hear me? Great to have you on there. I got to do a few things here to remind people that when you come on to the blog podcast, you need to go to almost everybody has an iTunes app now. So you can get these, or you can go to your computers to Blog Talk Radio also and get all of the past shows. It's already been a year since we have started the American Tennis programs. I'd like to thank Jason Haynes and the UR Tennis Network for allowing us to come on each week. Again, the mission for American Tennis is for you to stand up and to speak out and to really address issues that are important to you in American tennis. We've got to get American tennis back on top again. All we ask is you for stay professional, address issues, not people, and no man can find fault. My favorite quote is from Edmund Burke, and that says that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. We need you to stand up and to speak out. Take care of your circle of influence, those people right in front of you, and influence everyone you can to do a good job with tennis. And Mitchell Frank, I'm very, very proud to have you on the line. You are now going to go down in history as one of the greatest heroes in the history of University of Virginia athletics. And I know that you are quite proud, and I know that your family's proud. And Brian Bullen's got to feel good about getting that monkey off his back. I mean, how many times has he been getting beat at the buzzer there?
Yeah, that's his third year. And, you know, he was favored, I think, the last probably 5 years expected to win, you know. So, he's definitely – I mean, after talking with him a little bit, I'm sure he's sleeping a little better at night, you know, now than he was the last couple of years. So
it's a tough thing. It seems like this game always punishes you before it rewards you. It just goes that way. I guess that's the way that it tests people to see if they have a great resolve to hang in there and to continue on with their quest. Breakdowns always happen before breakthroughs. Listen, I wanted to go to this story real quick and just ask you, congratulations on winning the championship, and you will always be known as the person who were the last guy out there and won such a dramatic match. Can you sort of tell the story of that day and playing UCLA and sort of how everything came down there, Mitchell?
Yeah, it was a incredibly exciting match. We took the doubles point. We won one and three doubles, and I played two doubles, and kind of me and Alex Domijan kind of had a rough start to the day and not played that great in the doubles. And then the singles, I think we split three of the first sets, and I lost my first at 6-0. So I think a lot of people were kind of counting me out, and then came down to 3-all. I was able to win the second set 6-4 after being up two breaks, and he had break points to make it 5-all, but was able to fend them off and took the second set. So I went to the third, and we had one other guy, Julian Yerguin, at 6, who was in a third set, and he quickly, pretty quickly went down 6-2 in the third. So at about I got up a break 2-1 in the third, and then got broken back, and about 2-3 me serving, Julian lost that set 6-2. So it was all down to me. So all the pressure was on me. And we're playing it was tough conditions. It was pretty windy, and we played some pretty tight games. And I got down 3-4, and then he broke me 3-4 to go 5-3, and had match point, championship point for him serving at 5-3, 40-30. He had a great first serve. I was just barely able to just kind of bunted the return back and hit a backhand down the line and came into net. And I was against the wind, so my pass kind of sat up, and he had a backhand volley kind of on top of the net, and he hit it down. He's a great volleyer, but he did not put this one away, and he kind of lost control of his body, and so his foot actually touched the net. And I actually missed the lob on the next shot, so... but luckily, the ref called that. Called his foot touched the net, and
so you thought it was done. You thought you had lost.
I thought it was done. Yeah, I did not hear the call. I did not know that he had touched the net. I didn't see it because I was focusing on the ball because I was running down a ball. As I hit my lob up, I kind of felt it like it was not feeling. Like it was going to go in, and then all of a sudden I see. The ref kind of say something and point down at the net. So I was, so I realized that he had, touched the net. It just kind of felt like one of those things where it's like, destined to win after that. So after that, I broke him, won the next 2 points, broke him. And then was actually starting 15-30 in the next game. And fought off a couple tough points and was able to, hold actually for 5-all. And then I played a really good game to break at 5-6. And obviously at this point, everyone's going crazy. My teammates were on the side. Everybody was yelling after every point. And then was able to, serve out the match there. And it was a pretty, special moment for me and our team and, UVA and, UVA Athletics. So obviously to be the first champion, men's tennis championship is, just an unbelievable thing, to be a part of it, especially to clinch it. So, so it was a very interesting day. Started off not even looking like I was struggling to even get on the scoreboard, and ended up kind of, competing hard and toughing it out. So, it was a very exciting day. So,
I mean, you lose the first set, and then you have all of this happen. What an emotional roller coaster. Have you ever had a more dramatic match, or more of a, let's say this, have you ever had a more impacting win in your life? I mean, you've won a couple national championships before.
Yeah, I mean, as far as for what it means of, what it means for everything, probably not. Because in that environment, you're doing it for, you're not just doing it for yourself, you're doing it for your school, you're doing it for, obviously, as always, when you compete, you're competing, as a representative of your family, all your coaches, all, College Park Training Center. But also in that point, it was incredible the amount of, outreach that we received after, winning that match. We got messages from the governor of Virginia. We got messages from Tiki Barber, a UVA alumni, football player, a bunch of other alumni, who are pretty high up in the world now. It was incredible. I mean, it's crazy how, one win like that can really get everyone, at a school that's, obviously super big, and there's people doing amazing stuff every single day, but to kind of be highlighted on that, day is pretty special.
Well, that's the special thing about college tennis and team tennis, is how it goes from an individual and very much a self-centered sport often to a sport where you rely on each other and you learn to trust each other. And you go through this the entire year as you sweat side by side, and then it becomes a great moments when things do work out like this. But, Mitchell Frank, we got to go to a commercial. We'll be right back with American Tennis. And, folks, hang on. This is going to get good. We've got a lot of good things to talk about with Mitchell Frank in college tennis today.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Yeah.
America, made in the state of Virginia, and growing up to become the first player in the history of United States college tennis to win both the All-American and the U.S. National Indoor Collegiate events in the same year as a freshman. I mean, that's a pretty doggone good accomplishment. And then Mitchell, this year with your heroics at the NCAA tournament. But Mitchell, this almost didn't happen. This almost didn't come together. You had a tough situation last summer, and I'd love for people to know. I'd love for people to know about this. Can you talk about it?
Yeah. I was last summer. You know, I'd been playing some pretty good tennis. Won a round of qualies at, you know, the City Open there in D.C. Had played Michael Barrera, who's been up to about 40 in the world at one point or another, and lost a tough match. And, you know, took the next day off and then went to train on Monday morning and finished hitting and went into the gym there. And, you know, it went through my, you know, normal fitness routine. And, you know, as I was finishing, I was standing up off a mat, and my foot kind of got caught, and my knee twisted, and I tore my meniscus. So I was out five and a half months before I was able to compete again. And it was, you know, obviously a very tough time. You know, I wasn't able to do anything really for about 3 months. I was kind of stuck in bed on crutches and, you know, pretty miserable because, you know, I'd been such an, you know, important part of my life playing tennis, and I was just there, and, you know, I felt, you know, terrible. And so for about 5 months before that, I mean, I barely you know, played any tennis, and you know, I was just doing rehab, you know, 4 hours a day just trying to get back. And, you know, it was obviously a huge struggle, but you know, now my knee feels great, and, you know, obviously it's made it even more special to be able to clinch the NCAA this year. And, you know, now, you know, every single time I'm on the court, I'm, you know, definitely more appreciative of, you know, my opportunity and, you know, being able to compete. And I think it helped my perspective towards, you know, the challenges that come with, you know, tennis, because, you know, obviously there's good, there's bad days, but at the end of the day, you're still able to play tennis. So, and, you know, for about 5-6 months, that was taken away from me. So,
well, one of the quotes that I love as a coach, and we use it all the time with kids, is we always try to tell them it's more important what happens in you than what happens to you. And I mean, and our breakdowns happen before breakthroughs, and adversity introduces a man to himself. And all these quotes that we use all the time, and they seem great, but then when something like this happens to you, I mean, it just has to be devastating. I mean, you weren't even training. You weren't even running. You were just getting up from some exercise and got your leg caught in the mat. So, I mean, it had been devastating.
Yeah, it was definitely very, very tough mentally. You know, the first week or so, you're kind of in shock. And, you know, obviously I had surgery very quickly, and, you know, was, you know, they did a great job down at UVA helping me get back. But, you know, it was definitely one of the toughest times because, you know, I mean, I was just sitting in a bed while, you know, everyone else was able to train, and you know, I missed all the training, I missed all the competing, you know, and you know, it kind of drove me crazy. And there were definitely times where, you know, I would be like kind of sitting in my apartment or something, just kind of, you know, down or like just not feeling, you know, wondering if I would ever be the same or, you know, what was going to happen. And, you know, and luckily, you know, I feel great now physically and mentally. I think it helped me a lot. And, you know, now I'm very, I'm able to kind of deal with the, you know, the ups and downs a lot better than I was before. You know, I think the year before, it was, you know, a loss was unthinkable. It was like, you know, the worst thing that could happen. If I lost, you know, it was, you know, everything, you know, the world was coming to an end. And now, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, you never feel good to lose, but, you know, you're kind of see it as, okay, you know, this is a challenge. You know, now I have to go back, train hard, and come back stronger. And that's what, you know, that's why I think, you know, I kind of had to do the injury, and that that enabled me to kind of have that, you know, be able to compete even better than I did before the injury, which I think is, you know, has been a huge positive. So,
when this first happened, I mean, you had to have had times where you think, look, my career is over. I've lost this time now, and all that. I mean, what are some of the thoughts when you were laying in bed? I mean, I guess I would like to ask you this. Was there a particular tipping point where you just said, look, nothing's going to happen unless I think right about all of these bad things and I try to take my situation and grow from it?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. You know, at first, I mean, kind of after the first initial shock kind of sets in, then you go through a phase where you're like, you know, this is terrible. You know, life isn't fair. You know, this is, you know, why me kind of thing. And you know, you wake up and you're like, you know, God, you know, I don't feel like doing rehab today. I don't want to do rehab. You know, I just want to go play tennis. Like, why is it happening to me? But definitely, you know, once I got off the crutches and I had to start, you know, learning to walk and stuff again, it was, you know, then I kind of started to, you know, realize that, you know, that I was going to, you know, I had an opportunity to come back just as strong, if not stronger. And that's when, you know, kind of set in that, you know, that this is just kind of one obstacle, but the fact of the matter is that there's going to be many obstacles in tennis, you know, whether it's, you know, winning big matches or losing, you know, some heartbreakers or whatever. But, you know, so this was just kind of something that, you know, as we always talk about with the tennis gods, you know, there was a way of testing, you know, and
people like Thomas Muster and, you know, he had his leg pretty much crushed. You know, you have that famous picture of him sitting on with a cast on his leg stretched out. I guess it was some kind of a wheelbarrow or something, and hitting forehands. You ever have those thoughts?
I did. I was sitting after about a couple. After I got cleared to walk, and the doctor said it was all right, I was actually sitting on a bench and hitting forehands and backhands. And, you know, the coaches would go out there and just feed me forehands and backhands, and I would go out there and just hit the ball. And you know, I mean, obviously it was, you know, it wasn't the same as being able to move around and hit shots, but it kind of kept you sane, you know, and it made you realize that, like, people are going to be back at some point, you know, just a matter of time. But it was definitely a very, very long and tough process, but you know, at the end of the day, I think it actually ended up helping me a lot, you know.
So you are known as one of the most mentally tough competitors in the country. I mean, I would like to be able to put your heart or in your head on so many of our USA players who may be underachieving, and you know, I wanted to ask you, can you think about your own mental toughness? Are there any tipping points back when you were a youngster that you remember, that where you just decided to be such a competitor and to care so deeply about the sport and have such a determination of character and of heart? Can you remember any influences when you were younger?
Yeah, you know, one of my first coaches was this guy named Vin Doe. And I started working with him when I was about 10. And you know, the one of the things I think that, the one of the things you'll find about him is that all those kids, regardless of what level they are, they're not necessarily the best competitors, but they all love tennis. And to me, I think that was one of the keys for me, was that, you know, I never viewed tennis as, you know, a burden or a hassle. It was always something that was very, very fun for me to do, and that enabled me to kind of go out there and, you know, put everything on the line instead of being like, you know, I don't feel like being out here. You know, obviously there are days when you don't, but I think that was kind of a key influence. Was, you know, I mean, it was all about, okay, you know, it's not about you know, how I was going to, I mean, it was about how I was going to win the match. But the thing is that as long as I gave a full effort and competed, you know, that was something that was all right. There was no, especially when you're, I feel like when you're 10, 11, 12, it's more about development. And I kind of learned from early on that, you know, that it's not that you're out there, you know, obviously you're out there trying to win, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, if you outcompete the other guy, you're likely going to win. And, you know, regardless.
Joe has done this with hundreds of kids there in that Virginia, D.C. area. And, you know, he's one of the great ones as far as inspiring young people. And you're certainly a very fortunate man to have him early in your career. I think that we underestimate the impact of coaches, and you know, it's just fantastic as this story unfolds. Mitchell, we've got a caller or two here that are on the line. But caller, if you'll just hold, we'll get to you here when we come back from, you know, our commercial break here. But Mitchell, hang on here, and then we'll be able to take some callers and talk more. We're talking with Mitchell Frank today, the hero of the NCAA tournament. And I've seen every NCAA championship since 79, I think, when we started the team events, or 78. But I've never seen one that was more dramatic than the University of Virginia, their win over UCLA just a couple weeks back. And Mitchell Frank, you should be congratulated. We'll be right back.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At U.S. This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At USSportCamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit USSportCamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike tennis camps and take your...
Coach Chuck Creasy, I'm back with American Tennis, and we have Mitchell Frank from the University of Virginia on tonight, and we've got a caller that we'd like to hook up with here. Area code 864-871. Caller, are you on the line?
Hey, Coach Creasy, it's Chuck Waldron.
Coach Chuck Waldron, it's great to hear your
How
voice,
you
as
tonight?
Always. I'm doing great, and we're having an evening show for one of the first times ever here, but we've got Mitchell Frank on the line, and you probably heard his dramatic story beating UCLA. And Mitchell, this is Coach Chuck Waldron. Coach Waldron's responsible for putting 103 youngsters, getting them college, helping them get college scholarships, and as he is, been coaching in Clinton, South Carolina, where Presbyterian College is at. So he's on the line. You have any questions for Mitchell tonight, Chuck?
Well, I just want to say congratulations. I heard the story, and that's pretty remarkable. That's excellent. We need more stories like that.
I mean,
Chuck, have you been able to tell your kids this story? I mean, is he sort of like an epic hero around the training center? I mean,
it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Hey, Mitchell, you know, you talk about the impact of coaches on youngsters. Coach Waldron is in a community. You know, we talked a lot of the time about the power leagues in USA Tennis. We have 350,000 youngsters play high school tennis, Mitchell, but very few of them play more than 6-7 tournaments a year. So we have a tremendous amount of kids playing, but really they don't get deeply into the tennis. And I think this is true for a lot of coaches. Can you think of anything Vin did in bringing you up that got you interested in tournaments and the competitive aspects? Was there any tricks or anything special we could tell people?
I think the key is that, you know, obviously not everyone loves to compete, but I think that the key for me again was that, you know, his emphasis was on, you know, loving the game. You know, not everyone's a natural born competitor. Not everyone wants to, you know, I mean, tennis is one of the toughest sports to make a living in. But for me, I mean, I think that's why, in my mind, you know, he and then also, you know, obviously at College Park, I think you see it also is that everyone up there is genuinely happy to be there. Whereas I go to a lot of these other training centers or, you know, wherever, and these, you know, and people are bored, you know, they don't really want to be there. They're kind of, they see it as, you know, this work, this, you know, kind of a, not the most exciting part of their day, which I think is something that you mentioned in the past, is that, you know, to, you know, really improve at tennis, you know, or to succeed, it has to be the most exciting part of your day. And I think that's what I really, you know, saw at, you know, with Vin and then also at College Park, was that, you know, all these people that, you know, they couldn't get enough, you know, they wanted to be there. And then all of a sudden that transfers to, you know, so they see, you know, Dennis Kudla or someone playing a tournament and they go, hey, you know, he's having fun. I want to go, you know, be like him. I want to go play a tournament or, you know, or junior or, you know, I want to, you know, let me go.
Can you put a finger on what it is? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, what is it that Vin was doing special? What are they doing special at College Park? I mean, I think that's what we have to tap into.
Yeah.
And I know exactly what you're saying. I see kids all the time that come from academies, and you'll train them, and they're going at 55 all day long, and they pace themselves, and they're like drones. They're not really into the training. And I mean, what do you think is the inside reason why?
I mean, just from my personal view, I think it's, you know, I mean, I think it's the environment, you know. I guess that would be the best way to describe it. I see, you know, coaches that care about the players, whether they win or lose, you know, they're still, you know, they're with you through the tough times, and they're, you know, with you through the easy, because obviously everyone wants to be a part of the wins, you know. But I think that's the biggest thing, is, you know, it's this environment of caring, you know, that you get at, you know, College Park or with Vin. It's you can go through this, you can go through tough times. You can lose matches, and there's still a, you know, there's still a sense of belief from the coaches that transfers into the players. You know, you're not white any less, whether you win or lose, you know, a tennis match. And I think that's why, you know, that's my personal opinion, why it transfers to kids, you know, succeeding, improving, and, you know, being more willing to compete.
Well, I mean, you're saying the big thing. I always say it's unconditional care and unconditional love for a player, regardless of how their outcome in the match is. And Coach Waldron, I recently came down to Clinton, South Carolina, and I was blown away. I pulled up last fall to Clinton High School there, and it was going to be a high school. You told me to come by and see your daughter, Gracie, play a high school match. And I thought, okay, I'll pull up here and sit in the car and just observe a little bit. I got up there, and Mitchell Frank, there were probably 300 people at this high school tennis match.
and people were into it, hanging on every point that was going on. And I haven't seen anything like this in years. And if we have 350,000 kids playing, and very few of them really are engaged, less than 8%, they say, play four or five tournaments. I mean, Chuck Waldron, what are y'all doing there that is so impacting? You get Clinton, South Carolina, so enthused about tennis.
You know, I think Mitchell might be hitting the head of the nail there. I think it's the environment. I think we care. Well, I know we care. We care. We care about our community. But I think he's dead on it. I think we as coaches have got to be there win or lose. And we got to be there for the development of them, not only just on the tennis court, but about life. And, you know, these kids, a lot of those 300 people that you saw were former players. They have such an interest in the program, and they take pride in it. But I think Mitchell's right. Although I'm very concerned about our passion in our country. I think we're losing a lot of our passions, and you use the word drones. I mean, I see kids in these tennis tournaments, and I see that activity. But I don't know. I think Mitchell's correct. I think we have to be, we have to get back to the caring aspect in coaching. And when he was talking about that, I was thinking, God, you know, this guy sounds right. He really does. He really sounds. You're hitting the head and nail. I think that's where we need to be, because we're doing in life, in our culture, our American culture is not about that anymore.
Our kids are pretty void of passion. I think you see these things on the internet about all the kids holding their cell phones, and you know, at ball games and at art museums and riding down the road when they're sightseeing, but they're always on their cell phones. And we are creating droids there. But the passion of the sport, and you saying something also that you have several generations of your former players coming back. I think that if you care deeply about the people you're with and you build relationships, not just communication, but relationships, then it filters on down and everybody wants that emotion again, and it's connected for many, many years. But, Mitchell, I want to talk to you about college tennis real quickly here. I'm going to give you some statistics that will blow you away.
In 1982.
Coach Waldron?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, Coach. Go ahead.
When did you graduate from college?
1980.
Coach Waldron, you know, in 1982, we had 39 players that had graduated from college to go on and play in the top and make the top 100 of ATP Tour in the United States. 39. We had 42 Americans in the top 100. Today, we only have one American, and that's John Isner, that went to college and ended up making the top 100. Now, that's not good, but I'll tell you a worse one. On the women's side, it's been 20 years since we had a girl go to college in the United States. She was an American girl, and make it through college, and then make top 100 in the world. That was Lisa Raymond. Now, there is a young lady who went to Georgia Tech named Falcone that is in top 100 now, but that's the first time in 20 years. Frank, you know, as exciting as college tennis is, I loved it. I always say that I coached 10,000 days, 10,000 practices, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. But we're not doing a good job. I mean, that's just awful. I mean, can you talk about it? I mean, obviously you've got a lot of good and very talented players there at the University of Virginia. When you saw Steve Johnson, I think he'll probably crack the top 100.
He actually just did today. He cracked it 2 days ago. He's top 100.
All right.
So we got number two.
All right. But, so, Frank, what in the world is the problem?
I mean, to me, I feel, you know, just from my experience and to be honest, I think it's getting a lot better. So we've had some, obviously we have Steve Johnson, we have, Ryan Williams, who's just outside the top 100. We have Bradley Klon, who's about 150 and moving up, that's after a year. So I think right now it's a little bit on the upswing, but, I think the biggest problem is that, a lot of these guys, they end up in college and then, there's obviously a lot of distractions there, and it's very, very difficult for them. I think going back to what Coach Waldron and, what you've said, they find other passions, whether it's, when you're playing as a junior, obviously, you're always on the road, you're not really around, your friends that much, you have your guys who you travel with, whatever. But to me, I think what happens is that, these guys, they end up in college, and then they lose, tennis does not become their top priority. It doesn't become their number one passion. There are other things they want to do, whether it's party, whether it's one, they start to enjoy academics more. They start to see the value of, what they can do with that. They don't, especially, I think it especially becomes true with guys who, those guys who were forced, who were talking about, a little bit, growing up, who don't have that natural passion for themselves. They kind of had to be forced to practice to improve. They don't naturally enjoy that process. And so for me, I think what happens is that, you have this very, very, very independent, lifestyle, obviously, in college. And so for a lot of these guys, a lot of those top talents, they find other outlets that they become more interested in. Obviously in college, you have all the resources, if not more resources than you need to make it. It's not a matter of resources. It's not that, they don't have.
You got great courts, great coaches, you got balls, you got matches, you got weather, you got indoors, you got ball machines, you got everything you need, right?
Absolutely everything you need. So when you look at it from that perspective, it comes down to this idea that, that it becomes about doing it yourself. And so for me, I think that, when looking at kind of that issue, I think that it actually comes down to the player's desire. How much do they want to continue on? How much do they actually want to do this? And, obviously, when you're in another country, like let's say Serbia, those guys are competing for their food at night, and here, where obviously we have, all of our survival needs, are given. And so for them, there's so many other outlets that are, less stressful. Because, obviously it's going to, to make top 100, it takes a lot of hard work. It takes, a lot of commitment. It takes a lot of sacrifice. And, most people are not willing to do that. And I think that kind of is a testament to kind of obviously the individual players and also the lifestyle that they're kind of brought up in my opinion.
We compromise our people of commitment by even the commercial that they have on Saturdays. I always bring this up, but I hate the commercial, Mitchell and Coach Waldron, on the football game weekends in the fall. Said, listen, we have 400,000 student athletes, and they're all going to be going pro in something other than their sport. I'm going, don't say that. What are you guys doing? Don't you understand? Speak to the king and the queen and our young people. Don't dumb them down by telling them that, listen, go on to do something else. What in the world else are you going to, Mitchell, you're going to be tennis wife? Is there anything that you're going to do better than you do tennis? Is there anything you're going to do better?
Probably not.
I told myself
I'm not working in a cubicle. That's not an option.
At the same time, you'll be successful with whatever you do long after your tennis days are over. But don't speed that along and don't dumb down people. This is your passion. This is what you go after. Listen, in asking you this question, I'm sort of leading in. And Coach Walton, you will love this. Mitchell Frank, going off to college, you've heard about the dangers of fraternities and weekend partying and football weekends. Can you tell everybody out there what your weekends are like at the University of Virginia?
Yeah, so for me, I would, you know, obviously everyone obviously on, you know, on Wednesday, Thursday asks, you know, hey, what are you doing this weekend? And, you know, so for me to make sure that I was constantly, you know, doing the right thing, I would always schedule practices on Friday and Saturday night. And I would make sure that, you know, I was constantly, you know, getting better. And those moments when obviously that most people become weak, and I wanted to kind of show that I was, you know, going to be, you know, that this was my goal. You know, this is something that I'm going after, and I'm going to go after 100%. I'm not going to go, I'm not going to go half in. I'm going all in. And so for me, I mean, it's, you know, I would every Friday, Saturday night, I would go out, whether it's with Boland or, you know, or Andres or another player, whatever. And, you know, I'd be practicing at the courts at about, you know, 9 to about 10:30 or 11, sometimes even later. And you would be out there and you would hear the music blasting from the fraternities, and you would see everyone, you know, all dressed up, and you're out there on the court, you know, trying to, you know, figure out how to get a better slice, you know, or how to, you know, how to get your serve, you know, 5 miles faster, you know. So it was,
was lonely out there at University of Virginia on Friday nights or Saturday nights at the tennis court. It's not like the place the students would go to meet, is it?
No, that's definitely not the place to be on Friday or Saturday night. But you know, I you know, lucky for me, I have a pretty close group of friends down there who, you know, I mean, obviously most people when they go, you know, hey, what are you doing Friday or Saturday night? And hit tennis balls, you know, they obviously look at you a little weird, but you know, I actually have a pretty close group of friends who, you know, who have supported me down there, and then obviously everyone, you know, all my coaches, you know, back at College Park, and, you know, at Virginia, and Finn, and, you know, obviously Coach Kreese here, and, you know, I obviously have them to support me, and you know, and I can say that I still have not had a sip of alcohol since going to college, because, I mean, it's nothing against the drinking. I think that, you know, it's fine to drink whatever, but, you know, it's, for me, it's one of the things where it's a principle. It's like saying, you know, I'm going all in, and this is how I'm going to do it, and, you know, I'm going to do it. You know, it's a matter of time. It's not whether it happens or not, you know?
Well, Mitch, so, we have a disease of mediocrity in the United States, and, I mean, people will window dress up mediocre achievements as we give kids participation trophies, and everybody's a great kid, and we're doing pretty well. And let me just tell you, recently down there in those three events that I went to, the Futures event, by the way, congratulations on making the finals of that second Futures event down there in Melbourne.
Thank you.
That's a great job. I know you're moving up probably. It doesn't matter, your ranking, you know, is moving up and everything, but I know you're going to get to play bigger and better tournaments all summer. But, Mitchell, yep. here was sort of my observation. I told the six kids from College Park that we were with that the people that showed up, some of them wished to win, others wanted to win, and there were special players that needed to win. And the yeah. ones that needed to win, you would start facing them as you advance. Because early, it was really amazing, and every one of our kids, there were 17, all of them are 17, and pretty talented guys. They've got a good shot at doing well in the future. But I don't think we lost one first-round match to anybody. Most of the players were out there just happy to be there, not really competing hard. We had three walkovers where one of our players would win the first set and the kid would quit in the second set. I go, whoa, wait a minute, is this America's finest here? This doesn't look good. Second rounds usually were against somebody who was a three or four guy on a college team. But by the third round, you were playing a pretty good ball player, somebody that was pretty high on a college team or some journeyman that was trying to grind it out. But do you think that we allow too many pretenders in the arena? I mean, we have something like golf has, where there's a cut if you don't make your, you know, the cuts, you need to earn your card. You know, you know how golfers do. You have to go to Q school
yeah,
and
the school,
you know,
yeah,
and earn your PGA card. I mean, do we have too many pretenders? Are we diluting the whole process with so many of these guys that just say, hey, listen, I played a little pro tennis because you entered, you know, and lost the first round of a qualifier to Futures? What do you think?
I mean, for me, I mean, I think that I think that it's obviously important to allow the players to obviously have certain guys who are, you know, unranked who are very good or, you know, something like that. But I definitely do agree. I mean, there's too many, you know, guys. Like, I remember first week I was down at the Futures down here, I saw one of our young players, up-and-comers at College Park, Francis TFO. He's playing a guy who played, you know, six for Florida. And the guy had zero interest in being there, but the only reason why he played it was because his coach told him, hey, you have to play, you know, X number of tournaments this summer. You have to play three tournaments this summer. I'm making up a number. And so the guy went out there and just completely just, you know, tanked the match and, you know, had no interest in being there. And it, I mean, it was honestly a waste of time for Francis, who's trying to, you know, improve his game, you know, work on his game. And so I think that there definitely needs to be some sort of, you know, some sort of restriction on, you know, I mean, if a guy is going to go out and, you know, compete, I mean, it's unbelievable to me that someone would go out there and give,
well,
you know.
It lends itself to pretenders, Mitchell. It lends itself to pretenders. I mean, they're pretenders and contenders, and I just see this, and I start scratching my head. I just go, you know, what in the world? And these kids, I saw one kid tank a second set against one of our 16-year-olds. He walked over to his coach and said, listen, can you give me a ride to the airport? I think I can get on to 1248. And I'm going, whoa, the kid had already looked up the flight out of town, and he was going to tank if he lost the first set. I mean, this is disgusting. And these are the type of reasons why we only have now two college players in the top 100. And it's just not what we're after. And, Mitchell, I really credit you for your quest here and all the ways that you're going about it. But we have to do stuff with our system and the incentives and the way we give away too many things. We're escorting too many kids to the front of the line if they show a little talent. But that's just awful. I saw several college players doing that. So let me ask you a quick question. We only have about 5 minutes here. If you were in charge of everything in American tennis, is there any real quick things you would do, just some incentive things, anything that you can see as a player that you would do?
As far as for, like, a college environment or what?
Administratively, more tournaments.
Okay.
More money tournament, more training. What are the things that are holding our college players back and our professional players back? Anything?
Well, I mean, to me, I think that, you know, you look at a country like France, who obviously, you know, you don't have the toughest competitors there, but you have a lot of very good players. I think either them or Spain or one of those two has the most players in the top 100. And I mean, if you look at, you know, what they have is they have a tournament there every single week for someone to play. And if and they have, you know, club tennis, they have so many different outlets to play. Whereas here, you know, you have a bunch of futures, but you have a future a week and have a couple of challengers. And the fact of the matter is that I think that here in America, I mean, you just don't have as many opportunities as far as, you know, these, you know, like we just lost the LA Open and we just lost San Jose. And,
whoa,
you know,
you're kidding me.
Yeah. We lost LA and San Jose. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, most players, if you research it, they do their best in their home country. That's where they pick up, you know, well, yes, we need to go over to Spain, be uncomfortable, you know, learn how to play on the clay, whatever. But you're giving up, I think I read something, it was like,
you know, 1,800 ranking points by losing those two tournaments. And that's obviously an astounding amount. So, you know, if you want to put guys in the top 100, you have to give them opportunities to earn it. And to me, I think that it makes sense that, you know, that if you're going to, if you're gonna you know, do that, you gotta be able to, you know, hold these tournaments and give them opportunities to succeed. And I think that we just don't have enough opportunities, unlike a, you know, a France or a Spain, or, you know, I mean, you can lose in the futures and you can go play a club match in France or whatever. You know, you can be playing, you know, constantly, and whereas here, you know, you have your futures and then you go to the next one, but then, hey, there might be a week off, and, you know, and then you'll have one for, you know, a month, and then, you know, and that's just how it is, you know. So I think that's what that would mean.
Coach Waldron, what do you think, real quick there? I know you only have a minute.
I heard the same story. I heard it 15 years ago when they talked about Spain having a tournament every single week, and if you got beat in the first round, you could travel 30 miles and go play another pro tournament or go play a match. We're not providing enough for our kids to get better. I agree with him. That would be one of the things. And plus, we need to get, not to be against the foreigners and all, but, I mean, 78%, I think, is the foreign scholarship. I mean, the scholarships in college tennis are going to foreign players. We gotta cut that down and get it to lower that percentage. So
yeah.
American players will have a better chance.
It's about 65 on the women's side. You can imagine Title IX was set up to protect women from the United States, and about 65% of the money is going to foreign women. And so it's really not helping our women's program. What Mitchell says is true, but at the same time, I think it goes much deeper than this as well. Our youngsters growing up, and really, we do a lot to help people initially and to participate, but as they get to be 14, 15, 16, we don't quite understand what separates the cream from the rest.
Go, everybody,
and,
on the ground. Let's get them on the ground.
Okay. Mitchell, just real quick, what are you going to do the rest of the summer? We got about a minute here. What are you up to the end of the summer?
Yeah, I'm actually play my first round of the next features here tomorrow. And then I'm going to probably play probably two more futures here and then a week off. And then I'll be playing a couple of challengers and hopefully City Open there in D.C. again. So, you know, I'm just really – and then my goal is to make U.S. Open in the summer, try to earn my way in. So, so I'm going to be, you know, competing, you know, almost every single week, you know, maybe a week off here or there. And then I'll just be on the road just getting these experiences and just getting my game, trying to take it to the next level. And you know, that's what I'm trying to do with every practice and, you know, play every point as hard as I can and just you know, see where my game goes. So,
well, you've been
Coach
a great
Gracie.
Role model. So many youngsters, and I just really encourage you to stay the course. I know you'll have some hard times. Last year, if that knee surgery did knock you back, I don't see many things slowing you down, man, because, again, what happens in you is more important than what happens to you. And, you know, just doggone good, and we're extremely proud of you, Mitchell, you know, for everything you're doing here.
Made in America, born in a hard land, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. Never fire tattooed on his left arm. Spend a little more in the store for a tag in the back of his USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prisoner. He's just made in America.
Thank you, Mitchell Frank, for being on the show tonight. And everybody, follow this young man. The future is very bright. Thank you, Mitchell. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Coach. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
We want to remind you that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. God bless you, and we will see you next week, a week from tomorrow, Wednesday, every Wednesday at noon, American Tennis. It's Chuck Creasy.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.